Okay, good morning. How is everybody? Are you still happy to be here? Well, again, you know, there's this, if you're not happy to be here, then you can think, well, one thing is like, I have the permission to go, but still maybe something wants to stay, because it's always good to finish things that you have started, because one creates a habit of not finishing things, and that's very dissatisfying. That's really not worthwhile. So you could think, oh, well, you know, this day already has started, and there's one more full day, and one more kind of not totally full day, so I'll be able to survive. If you're still happy to be here, then you can think, wow, it still lasts 3 days. How wonderful. So this is how we learn to think. You know, this is how we learn to observe the mind, because we're thinking all the time anyway, and very, very often we don't notice that our thoughts do not give us what we actually want. They don't calm us down, they don't make us open, they don't make us happy. They just reify or fortify our anxiety and bad feeling about myself, and I never get what I want, and this is terrible, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, and we just let it go because it has become a habit. So this is one of the first fruits that you might get from doing awareness and these kind of things, like from practicing the Dharma, that all of a sudden you start to see these thoughts that are absolutely not beneficial, and thoughts can be changed. You know, emotions, you cannot change them. But emotions depend on the thoughts. So you don't need to change your emotions, you need to change your thoughts. And that's quite easy. You only have to stop them. Of course, they will come back again and again and again and again and again. But slowly, slowly, they start to change if you put effort into it. Emotions, we'll talk about this today. If the cause is there, the emotion is there. There's nothing you can do about it. But you can not feed into them, you know. And we'll talk about this, the second part this morning, what we will do. Let's take that, the foundation of all good qualities, read through it, because that puts great imprints on your minds, that we will be able to do these things, because we are asking for blessings. If there's one, you know, like for example, if there's one paragraph that you think, oh no, thank you very much, this I don't want to realize. I don't want to realize that I'll die one day. I don't want to realize that my existence is very precious. Then don't read it. It's fine, you know. And then what we do today is, I don't want to realize that pleasure is not happiness. Then don't read that paragraph. Because that's the thing about Buddha. Pleasure is pleasure. It's pleasant. It's not suffering. But it leads to suffering. But pleasure itself, there's nothing wrong with it, but because we don't see it properly, we mistake it for happiness, and then it turns into dissatisfaction. That's the problem. So if you don't want to know about this, usually in France, people, they have big problem with that one, because so much effort goes into pleasure, you know, wine, food, clothes, smells like parfum. So they have big problem with that one, to accept that all this effort that goes in there is, Swiss people have a big problem with impermanence, because they make their houses permanent, you know, always fresh paint and looking nice and very clean and blah, blah. Not ours, not where we live. Our house owner, he's in Mongolia. And he, from the rent that he gets, he has health kind of health projects in Mongolia, so it's great. So he doesn't invest much in the house. So no, I don't know if you notice it. In all our street, like all the houses are newly, freshly painted. We look like from a second world country, you know. It's like sort of rusty letterboxes, and the walls are, you know, not nice, and all this. And so I said, if we have thieves in this street, they will not come to us. So that's great. And everybody's happy with that, because he's choosing the people who rent the apartments. They know what he's doing. They know that he's not investing a lot into the house. And he's also choosing families, and the rent is quite low compared to other places, and he's also choosing families that have maybe a little bit financial problems or whatever. So it's a nice place to live, and we have very good atmosphere in the house. Also, like three kids that scream and make noise, nobody gets upset. Everybody helps this young mother, and it's like, you know, it's really nice. Because life is difficult already, so why fight with your neighbors in the same house? I mean, it's like, you know, why? But it can happen, and then that becomes, you know, you can't even encounter the person anymore in the hallway without feeling, you know. You hear them coming out of the door, you go back in because you don't want to see them. I mean, people do these kind of things. Do you know what I'm talking about? So like that. So if any of these paragraphs you think, oh no, thank you, I don't want to realize that, then don't read it. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once is greatly meaningful and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes its essence. Just a second. What I forgot yesterday. Here it says, the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once. That's not true, okay? Because we must have had precious human rebirth before, otherwise we wouldn't be sitting here. But you should treat it as if it is found only once. Because otherwise you say, yeah, you know, this life I'm quite a happy person, I have a nice husband, I have children, I'm going to be a savta. So, yeah, I think it will be family life, this life, and then the spiritual life, next life maybe. Yeah, so you should treat it as if found only once. Then it becomes really precious. Yeah, like the visa card that is about to expire. Of God, this is not a good example because you just get a new one, is it? I mean, they send you a new one. Maybe the card for the gym, you know, you paid a year, a yearly kind of thing for the gym, and you look at the date and you go, only one more week. And I guarantee you, you probably go at least once. So this is how we should treat our existence. Taking advantage of it. So sometimes they give this example, like thieves, robbers, you know, and they have a money-making machine from this place, the mint, the place where they make the banknotes. They have it, and they know it will only last one night. So how do you think they will spend that night saying, oh, I'm really tired, man, this is so boring, always doing the same thing, you know? They will work with a lot of effort and a lot of joy. This is the key thing here. For us, effort is heavy. We don't want to do it because we're lazy, you know, so we're lacking the joy. This is why again and again and again this meditation on, wow, I'm so fortunate. Or let's say, it's also an example I often use, but some of you say, oh, I can't relate to that, then find something else. Let's say, you know, by coincidence you buy something in a supermarket and you won a prize because you're the 100th person or something like that, and it's one day in a super 5-star hotel with, you know, gym and massage and hairdresser and jacuzzi and blah blah, the whole thing. So what do you do when you arrive? You go to bed straight away because you're tired? Huh? No, you would try it out, the whole thing, you know. So this is how we should use our, with that kind of energy and joy, yeah. Because actually something that we don't really realize, because this is why they call about, when in the sixth perfection they take the word effort, there's always joyful that goes with it, yeah. And I usually call it enthusiasm. If we make effort and we see the benefit of making the effort, it actually gives us a lot of energy. And we're frightened to try it out. We're frightened to stretch the borders. Yeah, because we give ourselves a choice to do it or not to do it. Yeah. And you notice that when you don't have a choice, when you just have to do it. Mothers, for example, you know. They have so much more energy than me. You know, I play with a small kid as long as I think, then it's enough and then that's it. But I see mothers, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours playing these stupid games that they would never play alone, Yeah, so where does that come from? It's love, it's enthusiasm, it's my child, you want the child to be happy. You can see how much energy it gives you. And joy, you know, even a stupid game. If you would have to play that game with me, you would not last very long. So this is how we should treat it, as if found only once. It's greatly meaningful and it's difficult to find again, because that's true. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly day and night takes its essence. Unceasingly means, you know, from time to time, you have to say, oh, wow, I'm so fortunate, privileged. You see, we know privileged people. The sad thing is we never think that we are privileged. It's always the others who are privileged. And they also don't feel that they're privileged. They look at those ones who are richer, more beautiful, more knowledge, more this and this and this. We have to learn that we are privileged. What's the Hebrew word for privileged? Huh? Anyway, anybody heard it? I don't know. Privileged. Having more than others, but not in order to look down on them, in order to say, to really have this enthusiasm about our life. You know, so fortunate. Yeah, instead of sinking into depression, poor me, poor me, poor me. Just a matter of thinking, that's all. Habit, habitual thinking, you know. This life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful to abandon even the slightest negativities and accomplish all virtuous deeds. So these four verses kind of finish the lowest level. If you do these things, you know, your existence is really precious, so you have a happy mind. It's easier to not to abstain from negative actions if you do have a happy mind. You know that it's not going to last, so then you've and that your mind will continue karma, so then you will and you live like this. You abandon the negativities, you start to do virtues, you will have a human rebirth every time round. That would be that motivation. I just want to be human. Okay, if you need the prayer, because it's there, it's I'm not sure if it's in there. Okay, I think I said at one point it would be good to have it, but I'm not sure if they put it after all. Okay, so then that means if you do these things, if you start to think in this way, you would then the result would be human, not necessarily precious, but human rebirth every time round. Because the cause, the substantial cause for a human rebirth is pure ethical conduct, not harming anybody. And that means not harming anybody voluntarily, thinking they deserve it. You know, feeling justified. Okay? They started it, therefore I can go and harm them. That's in karmic terms, it does not make sense. Okay. Then the next level is we want to get out of this being reborn again and again and again and again without having any control. In the same way, you can't tell yourself, don't wake up in the morning. You will wake up. The same way the mind continues at the time of death. Again, that's what Buddhism says. I know it's for many people that's a big problem to accept that. If you want to work with these doubts, you can start maybe looking how people behave in this life when they believe in rebirth. That maybe they may already, that it affects that life. You know they have to come back to this planet, maybe. That's the same way, you know, when you leave your house, then usually you clean up a little bit because you know you have to come back to it. So if everybody would believe in rebirth, that we have to come back to this planet, and maybe as an animal in one of these factories, that will make you think, you know. Then it has an effect on behavior, believing in rebirth. And Geshe Shetopten, he was the master of the meditators up in Dharamsala. And he used, sometimes he gave courses, and he was one of these boring geshes. Like, he was absolutely not concerned whether the people to listen to him had a good time or didn't have a good time. He was teaching his material, but he taught from experience. And I think I already told you a story last time. So Tushita, you have to pay. Yeah, it's not on Dharma. And so the ones who pay, it was in the old Gompa, not the one that they have now. So the ones who pay, they were inside. And the ones who didn't pay, because it's the people, the experienced people, were going down to the library and all this, and they were sitting outside on the veranda. You remember, because, yeah. So we would just open the windows, and all the people who practiced were sitting outside. The people who practiced, they had like eyes like this. I went like, wow, this is so profound. And the people inside, they go, this is like kindergarten. I know all this, you know. The arrogance of the beginner who doesn't practice, who doesn't, hasn't understood how difficult it is to put this into practice. So he said at one point he looked up, and usually he was just looking down at the translator. Did you do a course with him? Was it Geshe Shitopten? Oh. It was really amazing. I mean, like, just sitting next to him and anyway. So he would usually look down at his translator, which usually was Garrett. So then he said, like, then he looked up and he looked at the people and said, I know you don't believe in rebirth. It's okay, you know. But you see, if you do believe in rebirth, you're careful about your actions, and you lead a life that is meaningful, meaning a non-harming life. And you don't do just any action that comes into your head, because you're not concerned about consequences. And then if there's no rebirth, well, at least you led a meaningful life, so it's okay, you know. And then he said, but if you don't believe in rebirth and you go around doing whatever you want, harming others and all this, thinking that doesn't have any consequence, justify blah blah all this, he said, and if there is rebirth, well, then you get a big surprise. And then he burst out laughing. It's like, kind of, you know, really to show us the advantage, to really check the advantage if we believe in it, you know. I mean, if I wouldn't believe in rebirth, and I had no problem with rebirth, this is the thing, I already believed in it as a child. I even talked about it. People thought I was totally gaga, because nobody in my environment was believing in rebirth. So I was very happy to find these views, you know. Whereas other people, there's big struggle with it. So check it up. I think the best way to work with your doubt, not so much to read the books about where people tell their stories, even though there are amazing stories of people who remember past lives and as children start to talk about places where they were and describing them and even drawing. I think there was on BBC, there was this woman in England, and she died quite as a young mother in Germany, and she was able to draw that street. And from the drawing, they found out where she had lived. They found out the story is true. She was maybe, I don't know, 30, 40. She met her children that were 80. So where does that come from? You know, other amazing stories. Yeah, so just because we don't believe in it doesn't make it non-existent, you know. That's the thing. And then for you, it's quite good to check. Okay, I have life, I can see, I live, that's fine. But then there's death, I can see people dying. I can see a dead corpse, a dead body. Yeah, I can see that maybe something changes. If you sit with the dead body, you can see, at the beginning it looks as if they're sleeping. You can really feel that something is still there. And all of a sudden, something changes. And then you see it's just an empty container somehow. Yeah? So you can ask yourself, what happened now? You know? Where did the mind, mind, soul, whatever you want to call it, what happened now? And what do I believe what happens with me at the time of death will be just, you know? If you're afraid of death and you think everything is finished, your fear does not make sense, is not logic. What would you be afraid of if it's finished? Why would you be afraid of dying? Because there's nobody experiencing anymore that life is finished. So if you think everything finishes at the time of death, why not die now? Don't do it, okay? Because there is rebirth. But you know, when people who have this panic because of death, and they say, but I don't believe in rebirth, I say, what are you afraid of? Well, of this nothingness. I said, but there's nobody there to experience the nothingness if you don't believe in rebirth. If you think somebody's there that experienced the nothingness, then you do believe in rebirth. So check. You know, this is a very personal thing. What is my view about this whole thing? Seeking samsaric pleasures is the door to all suffering. They're uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate a strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Led by this pure thought, mindfulness, alertness, and great caution arise. The root of the teachings is keeping the pratimoksha vows. Please bless me to accomplish this essential practice. Just as I have fallen into the sea of samsara, so have all mother migratory beings. Please bless me to see this train in supreme bodhicitta and bear the responsibility of freeing migratory beings. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I don't practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. With my clear recognition of this, please bless me to practice the bodhisattva vows with great energy. Once I have pacified distractions to wrong objects and correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified path of calm abiding and special insight. Having become a pure vessel by training in the general path, please bless me to enter the holy gateway of the fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. At that time, the basis of accomplishing the two attainments is keeping pure vows and samaya. As I have become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. Then, having realized the importance of the two stages, the essence of the Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the four sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of the Holy Guru. Like that, may the gurus who show the noble path and the spiritual friends who practice it have long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. In all my lives, never separated from perfect gurus, may I enjoy the magnificent Dharma. By completing the qualities of the stages and paths, may I quickly attain the state of Ashadhara. So, is it in the prayer book?
No.
Okay. Shame. Somebody, would be nice, a good talk, somebody to translate it into Hebrew. Not to just to put it in the prayer book, because we can make copies, but to, because some of the prayers are translated into Hebrew. So that's, it's very good. It's good also if you speak a few languages, because it is translations that we have, and these some, so translations can be understood. You know, even you speak a language, you learn another language, it can be... So it's very good to read different translations of texts, because that can clarify the meaning sometimes also. And we can see how it could mean different things. Like in the 8 verses, you know, that one thinks, the first verse, one wants to be a wish-fulfilling jewel for all sentient beings. It can also be turned around. All these beings are a wish-fulfilling jewel for me, which actually they are. So it's much better to think like that. Okay, so it doesn't mention, I don't know if you noticed, doesn't mention anything about the First Noble Truth here. So he assumes that we know about this. Okay? So First Noble Truth is dukkha. And it's usually translated as suffering. And that's not the right translation, I think. Because for us, suffering is something, you know, you have pain in the body, you suffer, then you stretch, you know, and then the suffering goes. Or you take a pill and then the suffering goes. Or you go have an operation and then the suffering goes. So we think there's, you know, we can do a lot about suffering. But we don't understand dukkha in this kind of term, okay? It's more, life is dissatisfying. Whatever we find, that we find pleasure and happiness in, it always falls apart. And it never gives us what we want, meaning lasting contentment or happiness. This is why it might be magic, but it's not satisfying. Okay? The happinesses that we find are fake. because we don't have a clear perception of reality. We're stuck in imitation. The world is not the way we think we are. We think it is. We are not the way we think we are. It's all fake. It always falls apart. But there is something that is lasting happiness, is realizing the clear nature mind. So you see, if there would be nothing that would create lasting happiness, we could just be happy with what we have. We say, okay, temporary happiness, good enough. From time to time, these things come, pleasures from the body, from the mind, somebody loves me, I love somebody, da-da, wonderful, then it falls apart, no big deal, it's the nature. If there wouldn't be anything better, okay, let's settle for that. But there is something better, meaning realizing the nature of our mind as being spacious, luminous, no limits, like we did last night in the dying meditation, and having absolutely no fear. Buddhas have no fear. They don't have an agenda. They see, oh, it always continues. You know, this is from Turgyam Trungpa. I really love that one. The bad news about Buddhism, if you really understand what the Buddha says, it's like falling from an aeroplane without a parachute. There is nothing that you can be sure of. Nothing. There's nothing that you can trust in samsara. But we do, desperately. We try to find something that we can trust. Then it shows us its nature, and then we feel hurt and disappointed. Instead of saying, great, the Buddha is right. There is nothing that I can trust. But again, don't go. Then we fall into the other extreme, distrust, okay? You can trust that a friendship or a marriage or a relationship will last a while. And then when it breaks, you appreciated the time it lasted. And you're not spending your whole life feeling sad that it didn't last. Again, it just depends on how you approach it, you know? How do, you know, people who accept that samsara is in the nature of suffering. It's not suffering, okay? Not all of it is suffering. That's the problem. You see, if all of it would be suffering, we would be out of here long ago. You see, the example they give to samsara, like Lama Zopa, he says it's like finding pleasure in samsara is like finding pleasure in used toilet paper. Playing with it. You can play with used toilet paper, that's fine. But there's something better, clean toilet paper, for example. Or being of benefit to others. That's much more pleasurable, you know. Brings much more better happy feelings. I use the other example. I say, like, samsara is like being locked in a toilet. And you've never been outside. You were born in that toilet, and this is it. You don't know anything else. You don't know that there's a world out there, okay? So what do? You know, it stinks from time to time. Okay, so you spray. Then you start to paint the walls and you change the cover of the toilet seat, you know. So from time to time you have a bit of variety. You put different pictures. Then the thing breaks and then you try to repair it and all these kinds of things. And you never make any effort to get out. There would be the world out there, but because you don't know it, yeah. And then somebody climbs up and looks in and says, man, what are you doing in here? And they say, oh, look at my nice toilet. How is yours? You know? And then they say, I'm not locked in a toilet. I'm out. I'm there. This is the Buddha's, you know? And then they tell us how to get out. They tell us why we're in this toilet, because you never try to open the lock. You never try to find your pure nature mind. So, yeah. You can make yourself very comfortable, but what if there's no water? And what if there's this? What if there's that? Another example for samsara, His Holiness the Dalai Lama used in, I think it was in Nantes, which I really liked also. Being stuck in samsara is like swimming in the ocean, and we've always been in that ocean. We don't know there's land. So yeah, at the moment our ocean is really comfortable and nice. And we forget that it can get dangerous also. And we say, bah, why should I don't know where the land is, you know. Because it's true, finding full awakening is difficult. We don't even know if it exists, yeah. But maybe there's a helicopter above, there's some Buddha sitting in there and say, hey, guy, come on, start swimming. You know, because there's land, don't just lie there and feel happy and whatever, because from time to time you have a coconut passing by and then you can drink the milk and eat the flesh of it and you're satisfied with that. And you say, it's quite nice, you know, temperature is nice. No, that's what we do. But my life is good. Why should I want to get out? But the thing is, when can you swim? You can swim when the sea is calm. You cannot swim when there's a storm. We cannot practice when we're in the middle of a storm. So this is why we should practice when things go well. This is when we take advantage of precious human rebirths. You know, our life is not too... but we refuse. We kind of go like, well, you know, how do I know that there's land? Because we don't trust the helicopter up there. Yeah, if it would be the police, of course, we would trust them and say, where? And then we would go. But the Buddha? I never met the Buddha. Why should I trust him? Yeah, I know there's a few people on this planet who practice it and maybe get out of samsara, but, well, you know, it all depends on our attitude. It all depends on, do I realize that samsara can get really dangerous? I mean, here, I guess you would. If there's rebirth, would you want to be reborn in Israel? This is a very serious question now. Would you want to be reborn in a country where it's constant conflict? Would you want to be reborn in Syria? Yeah. We can see how difficult this is. And it is. It's sad and difficult to be stuck in a country like this. You know? But that doesn't mean that Switzerland doesn't have any problems, okay? Switzerland is also samsara. It's just, in Switzerland, I think there is more, we don't have to fight for survival at the moment. You know, we don't have to go to the army for survival. We have an army, but when there's an avalanche or whatever, then they go work, they go save. It's a bit like firemen, you know. if anybody attacks us, we can pack in, you know, goodbye. It's like, so in Switzerland, the conditions to practice are seemingly better, but they are not. Because many Swiss people say, why should I practice? Everything is going well. I have a good job, I have money, my kids are okay. Why should I practice? So the urge to work with the mind in Switzerland or Canada is very small. Sweden, Denmark, you know, these places. Because Denmark is a fantastic country. You know, the social system in Denmark is amazing. You want to study, they pay it. You don't have to pay it back. It's really amazing system. It's Holland, isn't it? I don't know if it's as good as that in Holland also. But Denmark is like, wow. When I hear what, you know, you don't have a job, you go study. And it's paid. You're supported. So we have to understand that it's not going to last, and there's rebirth. Now, this time, okay, maybe good. But what about next life? Do I know where I came from? Do I know where I'm going to? It all depends on the state of mind at the time of death. If the state of mind at the time of death is calm, peaceful, loving, you know, then you have a positive imprint that throws you into another good existence. If it's agitated, angry, full of hate, some people die like this. You know, they didn't give me what I wanted, they made me suffer, and not being able to forgive is like, it's hell. They're already in hell, even though they're still alive. And then you activate a negative imprint, and it throws you into a place where there's no peace also, and where it's very difficult, even more difficult to survive than here. Yeah. So when we look in daily life, how we react to certain situations, like somebody cuts in front of you in traffic. Ah! You know, at the time of death, we lose everything. It's much worse than somebody cutting in front of you in the traffic or taking your parking lot or something like that. So learn to act peacefully or to react, change these reactions, these very instinctive, spontaneous reactions when you don't get what you want. Then at the time of death, you have a chance to die peacefully. But if you don't train now, because the older you get, you know, the more impatient you become, the more demanding you become, if you don't train. I don't know if you know old people like this, you know, how they become, when they don't get what they want, they become like little children, because they do not have the power of mind anymore. It goes, it decreases with age. Don't get angry at them. They don't do this on purpose. They cannot act differently because they haven't trained it. You know people like this? Old people. Zero patience, you know. So, don't become like them. Train now. That has nothing to do with religion. Because you will need help when you're old. If you don't die young, you will need help. And then if you're bitter and demanding and impatient, you make it very difficult for other people to help you. You feel lonely. Because why? Because they don't want to come and visit you because you're such a pain in the neck. And you are totally unconsiderate about their feelings. It's me, 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 I. That's not a good way to die. Yeah. I mean, even you don't believe in rebirth. Do you want to die like this? Do you want to spend your old age like this? So every time you see such an old person, have you ever felt how, for me, the fear comes up? What if I become like this? They didn't plan it. They were quite decent and nice people when they were my age. They did not plan it. And I have this fear. Then, you know, immediately the motivation, may I not become like this? May I start practicing now to be patient, loving, considerate about others, to let others help me. I still haven't mastered that one, you know, to let them help me when they want to help me, because I will need help. Now I can still do everything by myself. And to even from my side to ask, could you please help me? Oh, this costs my arrogance so much. I can do this alone. So stupid, you know. It's so stupid because I like to help others. I don't know why I always prevent others from helping me. Yeah. Sorry about that. This is really, I'm sorry about this. I am working with that. Haven't succeeded yet. But I keep at it. Okay. So samsara sometimes nice, you know, the ocean, the right temperature, sun is not too hot, and there's food coming by, or, you know, even a boat with Coca-Cola and hamburgers, Buddha burgers, you know, veggie burgers, and all of these kinds of things. Life seems good. Life is good. Yeah, life is good. So let's use it for something beneficial to work with the mind, okay? But even life is good. There are things there that are, you know, in the aspects of samsara, or characteristics of samsara, that are not desirable. Even though they don't manifest, but they're there, the potential is always there, and they're not desirable. So we look at them. We skip the refuge, because refuge is kind of for people who... when I start talking about refuge, I talk to people in private, if they're really interested in taking refuge. For the moment, you can leave it. If you think, no, I don't want to become a Buddhist, especially if this is your first course, you should not take refuge, you know. There's exceptions. People who have practiced previous lives and it all makes sense and they really know they want to do this for the rest of their lives and all the lifetimes until full enlightenment. If you're really convinced, then take refuge, because you can't really go backwards. So you're not getting confused, jumping from one tradition to the other. So you have to know Buddhism in order... refuge becomes really strong. So then usually if people after maybe 2 years of practicing, studying, and when I know them, I sit down with them and I explain all these things. So we can skip this for the moment. And we look at dukkha, yeah? Non-satisfactory. Dukkha means also, the word dukkha in Sanskrit means hollow, no essence, kind of foam, you know. We get, as if we get so excited about clouds. Look at these wonderful clouds, and we kind of stare at them, we don't do anything else, you know. So, because we don't really have control over objects, because they decay whether we want or not. They're like clouds. Everything is impermanent. Nothing lasts. But we are stuck in these things. We want to make them last. Dukkha, what else does it mean? Yeah, not satisfactory. Pitiful, I would say. You know, you remember first at the beginning, the first meditation we did, we addressed this yearning that we have for happiness, lasting happiness, purity, space, peace. Do you remember? Oh? Yeah? Did you find it? How many of you have it? Nobody. No, I mean the yearning we have. But how many of us have spaciousness, lasting happiness, peaceful mind all the time, always knowing what we should do, calm, fearless? Nobody. Isn't that pitiful? And we know so many things. We have the best smartphones and cars, and now they in Germany they just I know these things because I watch the news. They have a truck who drives by itself, no need for a driver. It's been shown to the public yesterday. It was on the Tagesschau. So it's like, you know, but still, that thing that everybody is yearning for, nobody has it. For me, it's pitiful. It's also a sign we're totally going in the wrong direction, you know. We're totally externalized, you know. Everything we think, if the world out there would be a little bit better, I would be happy. If I had more money, more happiness, more pleasures, more friends or better friends, more maybe not, but definitely better ones, better husband, better children, better parents, I would be happy. Isn't it? This is our instinctive thinking. We always blame the outside. And none of us, neither in Switzerland, I ask this question very often, how many of you has what you really want? Nobody. Pitiful. Huh? So don't be depressed now, because we're just looking at that, and then in the afternoon this morning, we talk about the causes. And in the afternoon, we talk about the cure. Oof, how much time do I have? 10:15, half an hour. Okay. So, as long as we don't realize emptiness directly, as long as we believe that there's a real self that we try to gratify, and as long as we see the world in a dualistic way, I and them, we will have problems. Sometimes big ones, sometimes small ones. And they manifest having different causes. Like the first one, when you look at the three types of suffering, okay? The first one is suffering of pain. Pain in the body, pain in the mind. Is it satisfactory? Well, okay, for some people, masochists, they pay money. But why do they do it? They try to use the pain to gain happiness. They're not doing it for the sake of having pain. They're doing it for the sake of getting happy feelings. And it's true, very intense pain can give you amazing, deep, happy feelings. And sometimes people experience that, not just the masochists, but also other people with operations or whatever, like really deep, sharp pain, but because it makes you be totally present and you forget everything else. And then you have a moment of openness. That's what people describe sometimes when they have like a lot of pain. But again, don't become masochist. Enlightenment is not by inflicting pain on yourself. Don't try it out. But if the pain comes, then try to use these methods of mindfulness and be with the pain instead of pushing it away. That it doesn't decrease it, by the way, but it makes the mind stronger because it's in the present. It's not worried about the future. The pain getting stronger, and it doesn't make the situation worse. Okay, mindfulness does not make the pain go away. Don't use patience and mindfulness for that reason. Use mindfulness to recognize the impermanence of the pain, the dynamics of the pain, that you can, if you are good at observing, the pain can happen, and because you're in your mindfulness, you're not disturbed by the pain because you don't want it to go away because you're still examining it. You see what I mean? So the pain becomes welcome, almost. Like a scientist, you don't want the bacteria to go away. You need them to examine them. So pain is not your enemy. It's your tool to understand dynamics of pain so you can work with it. It's not your enemy. It's part of us. Dukkha, suffering of pain. Yeah? The next one is, this we recognize as not satisfactory, isn't it? Like, you know, whenever you sit and there's pain, like Nif, he's moving. Nif, why are you moving? Because there was pain. Was that pain satisfying?
No.
So we moved. It's okay to move. You know, I'm just talking about pains that you cannot do anything, because as you get older, there will be pains where you can do anything about them. So this we understand, I want to be free of it. It's all about the understanding, I want to be free of it. Okay? So the first one we understand. We don't have to be very proud about this, because even animals understand this. When it's too hot, they try to go in the shade. When it gets too cold there, they go back in the sun. When they're thirsty, they go and drink water. When they're hungry, if there's food, they go and eat food. Yeah? When there's pain, they bite or run away or something like that. Yeah? They react. And the reaction is, I want to be free from it. Suffering of change. This one, we already did that one, we don't understand. It's our pleasures that we mistake for happiness, but they always turn into dissatisfaction. Why do you think so much money is being made with pleasure objects? New telephones, new cars, new kinds of gelato or glida or whatever you want to call it, new kinds of pizzas, new kind of falafel, they're pretty stable. Huh? Yeah, so even that, you know, even something as traditional as falafel, we try to make them better. Because why? You know, these pleasures, this is always these, it's good that to remember these three things, what comes with them. They don't last, the pleasure from falafel. You eat too many falafel, it turns into suffering. This is the suffering of change. You have to stop it. Because otherwise, even though it's still the same object, it turns into suffering of pain. You get sick, nauseous, or, you know, bloated, or whatever. And we understand this. This is why we don't see the suffering of change as dissatisfying, because we just change. And we have enough money to change all the time, you know. Why that is, I will talk about after the break. And then this all-pervaded conditioned suffering. This is, we definitely don't understand this. Understanding it, meaning not here. The suffering of change, I understand it here. But still, when a pleasant feeling comes, I go, wow. Totally believing that it comes from the object. Then I have to take it apart. And sometimes I do. The pleasure is not in the object, it's in your mind, blah, blah, blah. This whole thing, you know. Then it doesn't create a new imprint for falling again into the trap of running after the Fata Morgana, thinking that it's water. Because as long as we run every time to the object and we think the happiness is there, we create another imprint that makes us run again and again and again and again. You see, just noticing that it's no water when we're there is not solving the problem. We have to first stop running. Or we have to stop scratching when it itches. You see, like samsara is a bit like this also. It's like having a wound. So if you have a wound that itches and you scratch, how does it feel? Pleasant. That's why we scratch. Yeah? And it seems to relieve the itch. But you stop scratching, the itch comes back. So actually going on long vipassana retreats or guenka retreats is like tying your hands behind your back and your body is full of itches. This is why the mind almost freaks out. You know, this is why this is so difficult. But really understanding this all-pervading conditioned suffering, this is what it is. Or let's say, you know California and poisoned oak? Anybody? No? Poisoned oak? In many, many areas of California, the forest is full of poisoned oak. They look like oak leaves. They're shiny, and they have oil on it, and sometimes they have like red, they're a bit red around. Poisoned oak or ivy. In California, it's oak. It's also poisoned ivy, okay? I only know the oak type. You brush against it, you don't feel anything. You come home, it starts to itch. So you start to scratch. Then with your hand where you scratched, you go in your face. All of a sudden it starts to itch here. You know, you scratch, and then you go somewhere else and somewhere else. Here you start to have blisters, you know, and it starts to swell. Sometimes people's face swell up like this because they're so allergic to that oil. So if you don't know it's the oil, you just keep scratching and you keep spreading it. This is what samsara is. We try to relieve that itch by using anger and attachment. But as we do that, we spread the itch. So what we have to do first is to stop scratching and to stop following these emotions. The instinct of, but I need to scratch. That's painful. Yeah. So don't go over the edge. You know, it's not as drastic as poisoned ivy or poisoned oak, which just create more imprints for next life. Yeah, so that's the problem because these imprints do not ripen immediately. So therefore, we have no wish to stop scratching. Why? Because we don't see these things as cause, the negative emotions. So the all-pervading conditioned suffering is the suffering of 24 hours a day. We carry with us the potential to have the suffering of pain. It needs very little conditions, you know, too hot, too cold, no food, no drink, no this, no that, you know. This morning again I felt dizzy. Luckily I have such good timing, you know. It started at 5, at 7 it was finished. It's perfect. I didn't have to come for anything. It's great. Yeah, as long as it's like this, I don't mind. But it's not satisfying also. It can happen just like this. So I have a vertigo, but for those people who don't know it yet. And it's been checked like here and there and everything. And, you know, Chinese acupuncture, this, that, everything, nothing helped. So I live with it. So that's what I mean. You know, as long as I have this body, there is a cause somewhere. And they say it comes from the inner ear because they don't hear, and then disbalance and la la la. So as long as the cause is there, although it's not always there, but the potential for it to happen is always there. The potential for the body to get burned. If there's fire, I get burned if I get too close. The potential to get cancer is always there. The potential to get AIDS, maybe not if you're not exposed to these to people who have AIDS. But who knows, you know, maybe you go to the hairdresser and especially in India, if you have shaved head, then they use a blade that has been used on somebody else, and sometimes they do cut you, and you know, don't know, it can happen anytime, like that. So that's not satisfying, and this is why there is this underlying nervousness that we have all the time, because we know it. We know how fragile our health is. We know how dangerous life is and all these kinds of things. Okay, so this one, but you see this all-pervading conditioned suffering, we understand it. But the wish to be free from it is like I have lash. An eyelash fell on my hand. I see it. I see the all-pervading conditioned suffering, but it's okay because not manifest at the moment. You know, really understanding what samsara is like having the eyelash in your eye. You just about forget everything you wanted to do, and you need to get this thing out. Even in the middle of a very interesting conversation, you stop and you concentrate on that. Even in the middle of a sexual act, you would probably stop. I don't know. Never happened to me. I mean, the sexual acts, yes, but not the eyelash. Before I was a nun, okay? Not the eyelash. So, but I could imagine I would stop wanting to get this thing out. So this should be the renunciation. When we really understand what samsara is all about, when we really understand the danger of this ocean that we're in, you know, that we only through our own effort we will come to the shore where we find what we want, you know, liberation from being reborn again and again and again and again in an uncontrolled way. So we can get rid of the suffering of pain, but really big pain, by not doing negative actions, because most of pain, body, mind comes from result of negative actions. We can get rid of suffering of change if we meditate all the time and we suppress, or how to say, If you have single point of concentration, anger, attachment cannot manifest. If you really have shamatha, your total peace, total openness cannot manifest. So we can get rid of that, we come to one of the formless realms. Form or formless realms through these absorptions. But as long as you have a feeling of I am meditating, there's a real meditator there, the all-pervaded conditioned suffering will be there. And even though it's not manifest in these form and formless realms, but you're still not out of samsara, and when your positive karma of being there is burned up, zut, you come all the way down. This is why already at the beginning of your practice, when we take refuge, you say, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, until I reach full enlightenment. That prevents the mind to go there in these pleasant places, or if you go there, you go there to deepen your shamatha so that you can use it to understand emptiness, okay? Because you probably will go there if you have shamatha, but then you go with combined with vipassana, combined with special insight of that thing, yeah? But if you do spiritual practices just to have a happy life, this will then happen. If positive karma ripens and your motivation was just to have a happy life, you will be a very rich person, enjoying their life very much, having no enemies, having everything at your hands, and being quite happy. And then all this effort that we made is for nothing, because you spend it, you burn it up. So it's your choice. So this is why it's important to look at your motivation. Why do I sit and meditate? And to see that wish that is there, that I should have pleasant experiences in the meditation, and to get rid of that wish. That you tell yourself, meditation is for the sake of knowing. Knowing what? Reality. Not for the sake of having pleasures. Then stay in bed and keep sleeping if that's all you want. And, you know, I started like this. Most of the people start like this with meditation because they see people who meditate being quite relaxed. But that's not because... No, I don't want to. It's okay if you have this motivation. Because it's true. If you sit and focus the mind like this with a neutral object like your breath, it does something to the brain. I mean, by now they found it out and you do become more peaceful. That's true. It has a good effect. But why limit yourself like this? Why not already from the beginning try to go further? Not just so to be more peaceful, but to be more peaceful so that I can realize absence of inherent existence directly. And, you know, in order to realize absence of inherent existence, you don't have to be religious. You don't have to hang up pictures. You just need to have a sharp mind. You don't need to be a Buddhist, but you need to do these methods. Okay? Maybe with time you will become a Buddhist because you find it so inspiring. And if you do make the step to become a Buddhist, your practice becomes stronger. Yeah. Because as a Buddhist, voluntarily, you take upon yourself, when you take refuge, that you stop harming others, voluntarily thinking that they deserve it. You cannot have these two attitudes as a Buddhist. I mean, you can, but then you create a lot of negative karma because, again, your mind knows it. I shouldn't really do that as a Buddhist. Yeah. So do you understand these three kinds of sufferings? Yeah, we understand the first one is suffering of pain. The other two, pleasure, we think it's great, and we spend a lot of money for these things that are of no help when your partner leaves you. The best ice cream is not going to help you when your partner leaves you. The best car is not going to help you feel better. The best house is not going to help you feel better when somebody leaves you, be it through death or be it through divorce. See what we usually do. We have these, we want happiness, okay? Do you want to be happy? Okay, good. Everybody, you sure? Okay, good. Yeah? Yeah. Great. So we make these pillars. We try to create some pillars that hold this happiness, like that we put this, we think that when we have these pillars, they become the fundament for our happiness. Usually it's health, financial security, like outside security, like not being attacked all the time, friends, what else? Good job, interesting job, yeah, all this. So these are the pillars. And then we think, well, it's like five of them or even more. And we think, well, if one collapses, you know, it's okay, because I still have the others. But you might have made this experience as you are in the middle of one thing collapsing. Let's say you find out you have cancer. Let's say no more money left and nobody to help me. No mother, father, family, sister, brother, friends, you know. Everybody says, no, sorry, look, I helped you so many times. Finish now. Yeah, that collapses. Or what else? Or your partner leaves you or dies. All these other ones, they don't help. You don't find, you say solace? I'm not sure. Tröstung. Solace, you say? You do not find solace by thinking, oh, yeah, my partner left me, but I can pay all my bills. It doesn't help, that thought. Or, yeah, I have cancer, but, you know, I have a good husband. Of course, if you lose all of it, it makes it worse. But it doesn't make it better, at least not at the beginning, when one of them collapses. That means these pillars are not as stable as we think. And that is samsara. We mistake them for being reliable, but they are not. So we go to the next point here. We have 15 more minutes and then we have half an hour break, okay? So if you can still bear with me, then that would be perfect. So then we have two more lists, the six sufferings. So you see, now, so the Buddha said samsara is in the nature of suffering. He didn't say samsara is suffering. He actually said this is suffering. And now we come to these lists. What is suffering? Or the newer, in the Theravadin tradition I saw, the newer translations for dukkha is stress. This is stress. Uncertainty is stressful. You know, you don't know, will they accept me? You know, you go for a job interview. So stressful. Will they accept me? You need an apartment. Will I get it? You go and see friends. Will they accept me? Will I find happiness? Will I, you know? There's nothing we can be sure of. Nothing. At any moment, we can lose health, wealth, friends, my interest in Dharma practice, my spiritual friends turn against me, throw me out, any moment. It's a fact, it's truth, it's a truth. We have to live with this, whether we want or not. Everybody knows this, and it's stressful. It's not satisfying, because we have a mind that wants to be secure. Nobody says, oh great, I'm going to a job interview, but I don't know if I get the job. What an adventure! People pay money for adventures, but then there's a guide, you know. And then there's a helicopter who comes to get them if they're stuck in an avalanche in the Annapurna thing or whatever, you know. So that's not the same thing. I'm talking about daily life. In daily life, we don't like these uncertain adventures. They're stressful. Okay. So I gave you one example of what samsara is, like falling out of the aeroplane without parachute. That's the bad news. What's the good news?
There will be an ambulance down there.
No. No. If we don't have the right thing to the... There will be an ambulance, which would be your guru at the time of death, if you have a good connection with that person. But you need to have a good connection with the person. There's some kind of ambulance, but it's very few ambulances. What is it? Exactly, there's no ground to crash. It's just continuation all the time. You don't crash. And as we're falling, we can start to transform and start to realize emptiness. Who is, you know, you fall, instead of you know, who is falling? And you know, because falling is such a drastic thing, this is why people pay money for bungee jumping. Because you cannot think. Because, it, you know, it or like these roller coasters, or now they have, roller coaster probably is old fashioned, it's not so exciting anymore. Now they have these things, you're sitting there, I saw it the other day, and it takes you high up, and then whoosh, you fall. If you look at people's faces when they're down, they're all very happy. Because why? They have had a short moment of nature of mind, because you cannot think when this happens. This is why people are attached to these things. Even if it makes you nauseous, you go back. Because you get a short moment of nature of mind, because all thoughts disappear at that moment. I used to climb, so I know these feelings, you know, when you upsile or whatever, you look down. And also it gives you, I have courage, you know, and you need to be, do you climb also? Or you go on these things?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So don't just use it for pleasure. When you're down, go, wow, I just had a short glimpse of nature of my mind. How can I get this without having to go on that slide again and again and again and again? Hey, through study and through meditation. This is why, you know, yesterday we talked about this. She said, don't you miss skiing and climbing? I said, no, I don't miss it. Because I get in on my cushion, much easier, less dangerous, much cheaper. And it holds, and I have access to it sometimes, not to the clear nature mind, I don't want to say that, sorry, but to deeper things when I have moments of realization, moments of wow, you know. When I see how my mind distorts the thing, when I see my face in the mirror, although there's no, or in the wall, there's no mirror, I go like, wow, you know. When I see that spider, even still now, I go like, wow, yeah. I'm stuck in illusion. This is just illusion. There's something more than that. Okay, so the first stress is uncertainty. We all know it. It's stressful. And when it happens, it's suffering. When you lose these things, it's suffering. But he's not really talking about losing it. He's talking about the possibility to lose it is stress. So if you have nothing, man, be happy. You know, we talked about the financial crisis last course, and I have friends, you know, they do work, but, you know, they don't have educations, or they do work, but they never have any money. They like to spend it also. The moment they have it, they spend it. They're quite okay. And she goes and cleans houses for rich people. So when the financial crisis, the first one came, you know, the big one, the crash, somebody that she cleans the house for, the husband, he committed suicide. You know, because they have three cars, house, this, that. But he couldn't imagine, probably, how it is to live without money. She said, for us, nothing changes. You know, so why should we worry? Yeah. So, you see, most of our suffering that we have comes because we had something and we lost it. If we would never have had it, or if we would have no access to it and no desire for it, we would suffer. So these things that we run after for our happiness, they are the things that create the suffering, because we will lose them at the latest at the time of death. And we spend so much money for these things. Unsatisfactoriness, this other thing, okay? Whatever we get is never enough. This is why there's the industry of pleasure. You know, also holidays, like people used to go just to the mountains and go hiking or climbing. Now they need all kinds of machines to slide down, or to, you know, trottinette and this and that. One needs to enter, nature is not enough anymore. You need to make all these entertainment devices, so it becomes more intense. Because we have become a society where we have access to so many pleasures. And then the senses become dull because they're exposed to pleasure all the time. I used to go to classical music concert. So when I was in India, and then when I would come back to Europe, I would hear classical music because I was not exposed to it anymore, and it was so attached to it. So my hair would stand up. So you see, we spoil our pleasure by having too much of it, because then the senses cannot pick it up anymore. It's like the toys. If you look at them, they become louder and the colors more strong, because it's only these strong things that can bring the mind up. And the batisri and all this becomes more and more and more refined, and then packed into where, as if you would eat the package, you know. How many things do you buy because it's nicely packed? You know, if you look at bread, sometimes these cellophane bags with the bow and all this is like, what for? It's polluting the environment, all these plastic things. It's nicely packed. There's more pleasure in the bread because it's nicely packed. This is what the mind says. So try to buy things that are not packed like this. And that I was somebody is not here. Somebody at one point who is making these things and bakery and packs them really nicely. She was in a talk, and the last time I was there, I saw she had stopped making these really attractive packaging. And I wonder if she still sells as much. But the bread is really good. But she stopped packing it in such an attractive way. I didn't talk to her personally. I just said it, and she as a producer. This is what would be good. If you're producing things, you know, then make the step. Say, no more of these things just because I sell more. Yeah, that creates positive karma, and then you don't have to worry about being financially secure. Yeah, in the future. Unsatisfactoriness. We make so much progress. Why? Because we're not satisfied. It's as simple as that. That's why we make progress. Not because we're happy. Because we're not satisfied. And we will never be satisfied. If we're not satisfied with what we have now, I mean, what more do you want? You know, the telephones at the beginning, they were quite big, these mobile phones. Then they got smaller, 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 smaller. Now they're getting bigger, 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 bigger. Yeah, it's like... So then this one is for Buddhists. Not for others. This one is because of rebirth. You have to repeatedly having to leave your body and repeatedly having to be born. If you're born, you have to die. If you die, you will be reborn. If then, like this. And every life, we build up the same thing. You know, we have to learn everything from scratch. We have to learn how to walk, how to talk, how to go to the toilet. Then we have to go to school. You remember how frightening this is? To go to school. I mean, I know sometimes there's people say, oh, I was looking forward to it. I'm not so sure, you know. Or the first day in kindergarten, away from mommy. When I had the restaurant, behind me was a kindergarten. And at the beginning of the year, I would see these moms in Switzerland bringing their children. The tragedies, you know. The mom crying, the kid crying. It's like, oh, it's horrible, yeah. So we have to go through that every life. And then you become a mom, you have to go through that also, or a dad, you know. Then having to be responsible, having to be independent, having to get a family, having to look after that family, having to provide for the kids with sports equipment and entertainment, books, clothes, blah, blah, blah. This, that. Children are very expensive, you know. If you don't have children, you have to work much less for money. Yeah, definitely. So at least, you know, repay the kindness of your parents who have spent so much money on you. So, wow. And then for what? To go and leave it all behind. Samsara is like, what is it? We accumulate things for them to fall apart, because that's what they do. By themselves, we don't have to do anything. To accumulate, we have to put effort into it, yeah? We meet in order to separate, and we live in order to die. That's samsara. Moving from high to low. Also, we make a lot of effort, you know, to, because we think that meaningful life, you're famous, you have good diplomas, you become known, you write books. By the way, Giddy, did you notice he wrote a book, so if you want, you can buy it. Because he has some good Dharma knowledge. I can't read Hebrew, but I would think it might be beneficial to learn something, even like daily basis kind of life things. So I'm not getting any commission, okay? So moving from high to low. If you go to old people's homes, you don't know if the person was a professor. Maybe you see it on the cane. Like the cane, they have had maybe a golden handle, you know, and the beggar or the homeless person just has a normal cane. Maybe this is where you see the difference. If you look at mind states, both of them are dement. Both of them are dement. Both of them behave in a terrible way. Sometimes actually the professor worse than the beggar, the old people. I have a friend who works in a hospice with dying people, and she had a very rich person, and she had a homeless person, like at the same time. And the very rich person, he was upset that the homeless person would just get as much care and attention as he. Are you working with old people?
No.
No? Okay. You know? How can you be as nice to him as to me? But if you look at them...
He won't be rich again. In his next life, he won't be rich.
No, probably. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe yes. Maybe if his karma is not exhausted, you know. This we don't know. So, but we can see that. We move from high to low. If you don't die young, you know, if cross, you know, James Dean's great. He becomes eternal. If he would have aged, he wouldn't have this kind of fame. But what does he get from it? Nothing. Nothing. Yeah. So even if he, you know, I knew Greta Garbo, I could see going from high to low on a first thing. I mean, I knew her. No, I knew her. She didn't know me, but I knew her. She came to our sports shop as customer. Terrible. So sad. No money, very shy, depressive. We were not allowed to say anything to her. We were not allowed to look at her. Only one person, always the same, was kind of helping her when she came to buy something. She only came when we had sales. She was living with Deborah Carr, who kindly took her in and paid for her upkeep. The Divine, she was called at one point. And this I know firsthand. This is not just a story I read in the newspapers, because I was there. So, moving from high to low. She wasn't satisfied. She would have been a happier woman if she would not have been so famous. I think so. The higher you are, the higher you get, the deeper you fall. So don't get up that ladder of fame and money and all this, you know. If it comes, okay, take it. If it doesn't, it's okay. No risk of falling very deep. In case you are, this is for people who are depressed by thinking, I'm no good, I don't succeed in life, nobody knows me. Be happy. You can't lose anything. You know? And you still have a lot of things. Okay, then the eighth suffering. And being totally alone in that process. And this loneliness, again, it comes from not realizing who and what I am. You know, it's not that I and Shoshana are the same thing. We are different individual mind streams, but we both want the same thing. We both want to be happy. Both of us don't want to suffer, and that goes for everybody. So when we start to look in this direction, be it, you know, it can be black people, white people, Muslim, Jews, Christians, atheists, Buddhists, whatever, we all want the same thing. Some people practice religion, why? Because they think it makes them happy. Some people are atheists, why? Because they think that makes them happy. They all have the same reason for doing what they're doing. We are all doing the things we're doing for the same reason, because we want to avoid suffering and we want to have happiness. We're all the same. So it's not I become her and she becomes me. It's from me and her, it makes us. And we behave totally different when we think us than when I think me and her. Us decreases my ego, you know, and I'm considerate about the other. It's easy. If you think of us as me and my children, you know, your children are almost you, or they actually are you. Your ego has expanded, your ego, the self-cherishing, I want happiness, has expanded to your children and to your grandchildren. And it comes naturally. We can do it. So in Buddhism, we just expand it to everybody. We have this ability to do it. So why not use it and develop it and expand it? then we're not so alone in that process anymore. But as we have me and them, I'm alone. And it comes also because of our dualistic mind. Nobody can see the world that I see. Nobody can experience my pain. You know, and the doctors ask, give me a scale from 1 to 10. I don't know what to say usually, you know. You try to explain to the doctor what you feel. They cannot understand, really, because they cannot feel it. So it's very difficult. Or when somebody dies or somebody has left you, maybe a person who has been in the same situation as you can really truly say, I know how you feel. But no, you don't. You do not know how the other person feels. Never, ever. And when you are the one who has this pain, you feel it. You feel alone. That nobody can take this pain away from you. No words help at the first moment. Afterwards, maybe, yes. But at the first moment, you are totally alone in that, with that pain. Maybe some people remember something. Moments like this. And it's not satisfying. Okay, then the 8 sufferings. Ooh. Birth. Birth is a happy event, isn't it? The mother screams, the baby screams, there's blood everywhere. What's so happy about that? See how we exaggerate? It's good to give life to a person, but birth itself, the way we come into this world, is quite violent. You know, having to go through this small first, you 9 months, you get used to this space in here. It's a bit small, yeah? But it's kind of, you're cared for, you're not an individual yet, yeah? You think the mother is part of you, actually. That's why birth is so traumatic, because you think you're the mother. You think that's the whole thing, is you. That's what psychologists say. And so, you know, it's kind of not so loud, it's dark, you get used to it. And all of a sudden, something turns you upside down, you know, and pushes you out through this channel. It's far too small for you, you know. Even though you're used to small space, but the uterus is bigger than that little thing you have to get out. And then you come into a world like bright lights, a lot of noise, they slap your bottom. No wonder we're not so happy. If you look at our start, it's horrible. You know, if I have to look at documentaries when I see birth, I feel terrible when I look at it, you know. And then because it's my wife or my daughter or my this, it becomes bearable. But if you're not connected to that person, it becomes totally unbearable. I can't watch it. I cannot watch it. I feel the pain almost, and it's like, so are we okay with that? Birth is suffering. Birth is pain. Yeah. Sickness. Sickness is satisfactory? No. Old age is satisfying? Me? No. Yeah, when you say young, you can say, yeah, it's not so bad. You wait until you get there. You know, I need glasses. I need a hearing aid. Then I need to operate my knees now. It's like, if somebody comes and says, you can have a better body, do you want? Yeah, of course, but it's not possible. So it's not satisfying. Memory, you know, it really goes. It really goes. It's not satisfying. I don't make a big thing out of it. Wrinkles, I don't care. They don't hurt. This, I really don't care. I was never attractive, you know. I always had, when I went out with other women, they were always the most attractive. All the guys always went to them first. So, also, I never put much interest in, I was never wearing makeup, never ever in my life. Once a girlfriend of mine said, come, I do your lashes. Then me, because I'm not used to it, then I've got another guy. So I said, you know, I was just not interested in all these kind of things. But it's also, if you have other friends that you go out with and all of them are so attractive, it's not so nice, you know, when you know that they're not interested in me because I'm absolutely not attractive. That was quite funny. But now, my attractive girlfriends, they suffer. They don't eat what they would like to eat because they might put on some weight. They, you know, they go to the hairdresser, they dye their hair, they do this, they do that, they look at their wrinkles, they spend a lot of money for creams, not all of them. Some of them. I don't suffer because I never had beauty. So if you think you're unattractive and you're still young, be happy. You won't suffer You know, the benefit of this will come in old age. Really. Okay, but in general, it's the pain is not great. Death, suffering. You lose everything that you worked so hard for. You have to leave it behind. And even if you want to die and you want to go, it's no problem for you. It will be a problem for the people who stay behind, because they will miss you. Death is not satisfying. And you know, full awakening, you go to a deathless state, meaning you don't have to be reborn again and again and again and again. Your compassion will push you to take on a body, like a human body, dog body, whatever body, in order to be of benefit. But then you do it voluntarily, so then it's not suffering. And then you know, if I'm going to be reborn now, well, I will have to die, but it's okay because I will be reborn again. You know, then you have to control over that process. But they wouldn't have to, these realized beings, the fully awakened beings. They could be sitting in nirvana, eternal peace, but it's their compassion that makes them come back. You know, like a mother who can't help to reach out to the child who has fallen into the pit that stinks. She would pull it out. She wouldn't be like, "Ooh, what about my clothes?" A stranger who just spent like $500 on her new dress? I don't know. She would take it like this, you know. Do you see the difference of the deepness of compassion? You don't worry about money, you know. Or if like the purse has fallen into it with a lot of money and the child, she will go for the child. Purse, well, yeah, okay, no, yeah. So that's what I mean. Death is suffering. Then what? Not having what we want, is that satisfying? Do you have things that you don't want? Do you want things that you don't have? Yeah, can you think of something? Yeah, me also. Healthy body, healthy mind, no anger, blah, blah. Losing what you cherish, very stressful. And we're exposed to that every day, you know. Having what you don't want, can you recognize that? And now, this one is a bit difficult to understand. Having the five aggregates who serve as a basis for future suffering. Having this, it's called contaminated body and mind, which comes from contaminated causes, because the cause is attachment, desire for existence, not for enlightened existence, but just for samsaric existence. And that's why it comes from suffering, it is suffering, or stress. It comes from stress, it is stressful, it's not satisfying, and it produces the next stressful life. That's why this is also not satisfying. So, now you have the lists. This is the assessment of the human condition. This is our situation. Now you have two possibilities. Either though we say, okay, I can see that this is the nature of my existence. It's there. You know? It is not satisfying, but it's not so bad. And you settle. You settle for that. But then if I hear you complain that you lost something or you don't have something that you want, I say, oh, but you settled for samsara, so why do you complain now? Or you go, that's what we do after the break, we look for the causes. And then we try to stop the causes. Because if this condition has causes that are precise, it can be stopped. If it doesn't have any causes, then of course you can't stop it, then it's just coincidence. And the causes are karma, our negative emotions, and wrong views for these three types of sufferings. There's a real I, the wrong you. Negative emotions of attachment and aversion, especially these two, anger, hatred, yeah. And our negative actions, what we said yesterday. All right? So there is hope. So now you have half an hour break. And try again. Take that out into the break. And look, you know, walk around and look. How long does it last until I'm dissatisfied with walking? When you look up, what is the mind seeking? Or what are the eyes? What is the eye consciousness seeking? It's seeking pleasant forms. What is the ear trying to pick up? It's trying to pick up pleasant forms. Like if there's music, oops, it goes out there. If you like the music, you know. Then if you go and walk up there, the fort, and you go around the fort. Yesterday there was a strong smell of human excrement up there, because maybe they were not loved toilets. So What's the mind doing now? You know, going, or is it going, if I would be a fly, I would like that, you know. It's just relative. It's not only the mind who says it's awful, you know. Try to see how our unrealistic reactions to good and bad, it's just for me, it's good and bad. If you look at the you, and you go, oh, this is so beautiful, then you go, really? Oh. What if I would have a toothache? Would I still be interested in that you, you know? Kind of try to see these facts in the break, yeah? To see what the Buddha says, whether it's true or not. Okay? The search for pleasant things. If you go and, you know, you go there, then what shall I take? Geranium, lemongrass, or this? What? Which one? Oh, I take all three, kind of, because then maybe it's more pleasant, you know? How we choose all the time we have to choose. And to see how this makes the mind confused, it doesn't make it clear. All these choices. At lunchtime you can expend when you go for lunch, how you choose. Okay? So enjoy your break. We meet again in half an hour at 11 o'clock. And you're still in silence, okay?